You're listening to the EDI Insights podcast from Ecosio, your go-to source for top tips and expert opinion on the most important B2B integration topics. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the EDI Insights podcast. My name's Will Smith. I'm an EDI analyst at Ecosio. Today, I'm joined once again by Ecosio co-founder Philip Legal to discuss retail supply chain optimization. So, as usual, Philip, would you just mind kind of very briefly introducing yourself?
No, not at all. Hi, Will. Thanks for having me. Also, super excited to be here. In regard to my background, I'm a computer scientist. I co-founded Ecosio, already mentioned that. And at Ecosio, I'm responsible for marketing and sales activities, but also for everything in regard to SAP, ERP integration, and e-invoicing. And I'm super excited to talk a little bit with you about the challenges in particular in regard to retail today.
Great. Well, great to have you. So as you mentioned, the reason we're here today is to talk a bit about supply chain optimization. This is obviously a subject of real interest for a lot of people at the moment, thanks to the volatility, shall I say, that we've seen in recent years. So, you know, issues such as COVID, Brexit here in the UK, obviously, the war in Ukraine, all of these have really highlighted the importance of flexible and resilient systems and processes. And obviously, all supply chains are vulnerable, but retail probably more than most, thanks to the fast pace at which they move. So I wondered if we could speak just a little bit about the challenges facing retail businesses at the moment and in the next few years, and hopefully give people some actionable insights when it comes to creating a more resilient retail supply chain. So I think probably a good place to start, because just a personal gripe I have when people talk about optimization generally is it's too big of a topic. So I thought maybe to start, we could just kind of narrow down what exactly we mean by optimization or supply chain optimization in particular. So what are the end goals of an optimization project in your eyes?
Yeah, good question. Let me maybe start with the strongest argument here. Eventually, the goal of every or any supply chain optimization is to build better and stronger partner relationships. I mean, this may sound like an obvious answer, but if you think about it in more detail, having a close relationship to your suppliers and to your customers or also the governmental institutions is of utmost importance, in particular to your value chains. And the good news there is, in particular, when we talk about optimization, we typically mean we would like to electrify, we would like to digitalize these processes. And that usually also leads to huge time and cost savings because there is no more manual labor involved. Just think about manual order entry or manual invoicing or invoice reconciliations with payments, for instance. And associated with that, of course, also reduced risk. Because eventually, if the process is digitalized, that typically means less errors and thus less, say, error chasing. And eventually also, of course, competitive advantage over those still doing it with manual labor or using paper, and flexibility for future changes. So I guess they will be the most important ones.
Yeah, that makes complete sense. So I wonder, maybe should we look at, I mean, that was quite general in terms of optimization. Should we look at in a bit more detail at how retail requirements are changing? Obviously, we mentioned earlier that they're possibly changing faster than requirements in other areas. So could you just break that down for us a little bit?
Yeah, no, absolutely happy to do so. I mean, retail requirements, let's maybe look at it from a broader perspective. How has retail changed in general? Obviously, e-commerce and the means of the internet have brought potentially the biggest changes to retail per se. Today, the average consumer, and that of course includes you and me, we typically have the attitude, what do you mean it's not there? What do you mean it's not on the shelf? We have the attitude, it must be there 24/7, always, we are always able to order, and they are always able to ship within, say, the next 2 days. So waiting for something or not having access to something is sort of, I would say, not the average mindset nowadays. And particularly if you think about younger customers, that even gets worse from a retailer's perspective. So what does that in turn mean for us from a supply chain perspective? First of all, we need better demand. We have a higher demand for increased visibility. So in particular, say demand spikes must be detected earlier, and we must communicate demand to our suppliers early enough so they are able to steer their own supply chains. And other aspects which come with retail nowadays are that processes are changing. So we have a lot of drop shipping nowadays. So people would buy online in the retailer's online store, but the shipping is then being done by the eventual supplier, and the retailer is sort of acting like Amazon does, but never has the goods in his hands. Mm-hmm. Or what we also see is more and more vendor-managed inventory, where the supplier in turn is responsible for replenishing the shelves and not the retailer. And that, of course, has high implications on EDI processes and digital processes as well. Not to say without electronic processes, that's simply not feasible to achieve.
Mm. Yeah, it's great to have for those that can implement those systems, but not always super easy to do so, and impossible without automation. So what about kind of EDI specifically? Are there requirements that relate to retail that are changing in that space? Mm.
Yes, there certainly are changes. If we look back, say, into the 90s, it all started with, let's get the order into an electronic form and exchange that using EDI data, or maybe the invoice, just to take two documents. And that has grown into a multitude of different document types, which are used nowadays, ranging from price catalogs to order responses, dispatch advices, of course, in order to accompany the goods which are being shipped, not to mention all the document types towards logistic companies or banks, for instance. So the demand is growing, it was growing, and it still is. So as a rule of thumb, if the process can be automated, it will be automated eventually. I call that legal law like Moore's law, and that's something we need to keep in mind. There are also new document types which bring significant process changes. So, for instance, order changes in particular allow suppliers to react in a more timely manner to change requirements of the retailers, and in particular, if you receive the order change early enough, you, for instance, avoid sending two trucks where one truck would have been sufficient. So again, that's cost savings. And of course, eventually the e-invoicing requirements and regulations, which pop up like the mushrooms around us. So France will introduce it in July 2024. Poland will do so on the 1st of January 2024. Spain just announced that they are moving towards mandatory e-invoicing, and we see it in Italy. Since the 1st of July 2019, there are no more paper invoices, and it works like a charm, I have to admit, and the others want to be like Italy. So we see a strong tendency towards e-invoicing and continuous transaction control.
Yeah, that's definitely one area of EDI that really does seem to be kind of picking up speed noticeably over the last couple of years. So we talked about then the requirements that are changing in the retail space. Should we maybe look in a little bit more detail at the main issues then, more specifically, that are facing retail businesses? So could you just kind of narrow them down for us?
First of all, It's visibility of key data. So we saw before that knowing where goods are, knowing that your suppliers know what your demand is and the like is key for agility and responsiveness in for both the suppliers and the retailers. Mm-hmm. Other aspects, and unfortunately we saw that with the war which broke out last year, we have the vulnerability to factors which are not under our direct control, whether that are political, economic, or even logistic issues. We talked before in another podcast when we mentioned the problems we have there with blocked ports, for instance, in the United Kingdom. Typically not directly under our control.
Well, I remember when, wasn't there an Icelandic volcano that went off a few years ago and it just stopped air travel in, you know, part of the northern hemisphere for weeks?
Absolutely. Who could have envisioned that? So, I mean, no risk assessment plan potentially took that into account. Yeah. Still, we need to live with it and we need to adapt to these situations. And also, I mean, before we mentioned digitizing processes is the holy grail to automation and to supply chain efficiency. That, of course, is also accompanied by higher workload. And we have increasing efficiency requirements at the same time without increasing the internal workload, because then you're potentially doing it wrong if those two go hand in hand. And finally, and I know it's quite easy to talk about these things in a podcast or say in a seminar room at university, but the reality is that many retailers and many suppliers still deal with lots of legacy tech, and just introducing new things like on a blank sheet of paper is most of the times not that easy. Mm. So that's something we also need to consider.
Yeah, I think from what I understand, the approach from a lot of retailers seems to be, you know, if it isn't broken, don't mess with it. But, you know, they don't necessarily always understand just how broken, in inverted commas, it actually is. You know, it might be operating at, you know, half the efficiency that they could have with another option.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay. Do you want to talk a little bit about the kind of EDI specific issues that that retail businesses are facing as well?
Yeah, I mean, whether you look on the supplier's side or on the retailer's side, the situation is oftentimes similar, not to say the same. First of all, the general idea is do what you do best and concentrate on that. So if you do what you do best, you typically, and you do it even better, you achieve excellence. On the other hand side, for most of the suppliers and retailers, that means doing EDI themselves or doing most of the EDI tasks themselves doesn't really scale. So ideally, you have a minimal support for key EDI tasks such as partner onboarding or error resolution internally. Mm-hmm. So you can concentrate on selling or procuring goods and not so much on EDI processes. So leaving EDI entirely to internal teams can be tough, not only tough because of the workload, but oftentimes also tough because you oftentimes don't even find the right people or the right highly skilled people to do it.
And requirements will just naturally increase over time. I mean, we were talking about e-invoicing requirements earlier being introduced all over Europe in particular, but also, you know, you might want to onboard new partners or increase automation across your supply chain. So naturally, as time goes on, you're going to need more and more effort internally if you do choose to handle it that way.
Yes, absolutely. And when we talk in particular about the human factor, and you talk to the average college or high school graduate and you ask them about their future career, B2B integration expert is typically not on,
it's on the tip of people's tongues.
Yes, exactly. Right after astronaut and or something like
Instagram
that.
Instagram influencer, yeah.
Exactly. Those typically win. But the hardworking supply chain optimizers, they typically are rather below. So kidding aside, we also have bottlenecks and inefficiencies in the companies themselves. We mentioned before legacy tech, which by definition is there, in particular if the corporation is larger, and dealing with these bottlenecks and inefficiencies while still providing top-notch EDI services and integration capabilities can be challenging. So eventually future-proofing the EDI solution, that is the main challenge retailers have nowadays.
Okay, so should we maybe look at exactly what optimization involves, just following on from those issues then? So maybe breaking it down, you mentioned improving data quality and visibility would be a really great step that people could take. So what would that look like? What would that involve?
Yeah, in regard to that, I mean, let's start with data quality. And I think this is the obvious one. If you don't do your homework in your ERP system and you don't maintain the correct metadata, master data for your different suppliers and customers, it's just natural that EDI messages will fail. In fact, over 90% of all EDI errors are due to wrong master data. So it's not the EDI software's fault or the EDI service provider's fault. It's simply the fact that either on the sender's or on the receiver's side, somebody did not do his homework or her homework. So improving that data quality eventually will lead to better processes. And then the second point you mentioned, there is visibility. And visibility certainly is quite generic from the wording, but what does it mean exactly? Visibility means I need to give everybody who's involved in that EDI process the full scope, the full visibility on the process per se. And unfortunately, in many companies nowadays, the EDI solutions are sort of black boxes. So data flows in there, then some magic thing happens, and then eventually maybe a purchase order pops out on the other side or not. And if not, the reason is unknown. And that is, of course, bad. So we need to give everybody involved in the process the necessary visibility.
Well, I think a black box is quite a good metaphor, actually, for a supply chain or for EDI in the supply chain. Because, you know, during COVID, for example, we saw loads of supply chains fall apart. And really the place that you have to look to find out what went wrong is often the EDI solution.
Yes, absolutely.
So you also mentioned safeguarding data as an issue or data risk as an issue. So what can people do there?
Yeah, I mean, the important news there is just like you have a backup of your private photos on whether that is in iCloud or on a hard disk stored somewhere in the shelf in your living room. Doesn't matter. The important fact is that there is backup and then that there is redundancy. And the same holds true for EDI solutions. It's of utmost importance that the infrastructure is redundant and you make sure that processes and systems aren't dependent on a single point of failure there. Mm-hmm. And we oftentimes tend to think about technology there. I mean, yes, technology is important, but we also have the human factor again. And what we see, and this is really, even frightening, I would say, that in many companies, EDI know-how is focused on one single person, is concentrated on that single person. And if that single person is no longer available due to whatever reasons, that poses a massive business risk. So that's also part of safeguarding data.
Okay. And what would you say optimization involves when it comes to preparing for the future then?
I mean, first of all, don't stick with status quo.
Mm-hmm. Especially when it's not working.
exactly, as clumsy as that might sound. But innovation is a constant. So if you don't innovate, you will eventually lose ground to your innovators. Always challenge the status quo and look for the optimal solution. And in particular, in regard to IT, but also integration, things are so fast-paced that something you have brought into action 2 or 3 or 4 years ago is not necessarily top-notch anymore nowadays. From a technical standpoint, from a process standpoint, the discussions about around ERP processes and the like. So I guess the best preparation for the future is to embrace change and to embrace innovation and to build the flexibility and scalability already into existing systems and processes, then I guess you're well prepared.
Yeah, I think that again goes back to your point of the dangers of having maybe just one person internally, for example, responsible for EDI, because naturally they're going to be focused on making the most of the system that they have and not necessarily looking at how they can optimize it and just focusing on the day-to-day. But obviously, if you were to maybe shift that to experts in that field, you've got more chance of getting an optimal solution.
Yes, absolutely.
Excellent. So I thought maybe at the end of the podcast, obviously you've done a load of integration, EDI integrations with big retail companies. I was wondering if you could maybe just give us a snapshot of a couple of them and talk us through the problems that they were experiencing, the solution that was recommended, and then what the results were.
Yeah, no, happy to do so. Maybe let's start with the suppliers side. Mm-hmm. And we could take, for instance, Otterkringer or Fürstlauer as an example. Otterkringer is a quite famous beer brand from here in Vienna in Austria. They are also the owner of Fürstlauer mineral water or sparkling water. Mm-hmm. And the challenge they have is obviously they are being sold in all the big retailers in throughout Austria on the Austrian Federal Railways. If you go to the restaurant wagon or car there, you can also buy it on Austrian Airlines at the airport. And so, yeah, sort of everywhere, basically. And not only in Austria, but also in Germany, for instance. So they are running an SAP system internally, and they used to do everything themselves. So ranging from setting up partner connections to setting up document mappings and doing all the communication to the various retailers themselves. And as you can imagine, no retailer is like the other. We have concepts such as, say, cross-border logistics, or then an invoice recipient, which does not equal the buyer and the like. In particular, a famous one in the German-speaking world here is Markant, which sort of regulates payments mm-hmm. between a retailer and their suppliers. Then there is beer tax. They also sell beer and beer tax supplies. So long story short, their internal resources weren't sufficient anymore to cope with the always growing requirements of the retailers. And on the other hand side, they were looking for a partner who could take ownership of the process and who would also provide them visibility, because with their existing solution, they didn't have the necessary visibility on the EDI processes, in particular if there were errors to be chased. And how did we solve it? We did introduce a specific piece of software there, an Ecosio integration for SAP, a dedicated piece of middleware, which sends and receives IDOCs from SAP to Ecosio. And from Ecosio onwards, they are able to fulfill all interactions with their suppliers and customers, even exotic ones. They, for instance, I don't know if you knew that Otterkringer is filling all the Budweiser beer from Czech Republic, which is being sold in Austria. Uh-huh. Fun fact. So the beer comes to Austria in huge tanks, but the cans, for instance, are being filled by Otterkringer for Budweiser in Czech Republic. So that's one example where we could help the supplier. And a retailer example is, for instance, Miko. Miko is the largest private employer of Switzerland, and also in regard to the turnover, the largest retailer. They own multiple retail outlets, gas stations, and so on in Switzerland. Mm. And they were looking for an EDI provider who could, on the one hand side, connect all their suppliers to their central SAP-based infrastructure, but also the customer side. I mean, you might now wonder, well, how is that feasible? Miko is a retailer. The customers are you and me. We don't have EDI. That's true for most of the customers, but they also produce goods, which are then being sold at other retailers or at fuel stations and so on. So for that part, they also need customer EDI. And they started with X400 routing with the COSIO. So we just did the routing part for the X400 protocol and then gradually extended our services. And today we are fulfilling all EDI requirements, including mappings and connectivity to all suppliers and customers. And it's really a huge success story. Just came back from the final project celebration 2 weeks ago in Zurich, mm-hmm. and really a nice case study where you can see that we need to be fair here. Migro also said, well, this is really a huge step here we are taking, because we are giving the core processes of this company, the DNA of that company, and EDI at some point is sort of the DNA, it's the nerve system of the company to an external partner. We need to trust that partner, because if the nerves aren't working anymore, the organism will eventually fail. And here we can really prove that we add value and we didn't lose a single message, and we don't plan to do so.
Yeah, and I think I'm right in saying that as far as retail businesses go, Migro is one of the first to have a kind of working in-house EDI system. They've had it for decades.
Yes, that's true. And of course, there was also a big step to say goodbye to what served them so well for so long and to move to an EDI as a service solution. But I mean, you hear it from with their own words in the video. They didn't regret a single second.
Yeah, I should mention, if anyone wants more information on either of those examples there, we do actually have kind of more detailed breakdowns on our website, so you can easily find them. But Philip, that takes us rather nicely to the end of the podcast. But of course, before I let you go, I'm going to ask you to give us some kind of actionable insights, or maybe just three key tips. I, of course, call it legal advice, given your last name. Yeah. As usual, would you be able to give us a few tips before we leave everyone?
Yeah, happy to do so. We already heard legal is law, which we just invented today. What was it, by the way? It was what can be automated will eventually be automated.
Yes, I believe. Yeah.
Then, the legal advice, kidding aside again, I guess first, don't make EDI an afterthought. It's central to successful retail supply chains, so it should be on top of mind, in particular when it comes to optimizing processes or implementing new systems. Mm-hmm. I guess this is one important effect here. Second is, and we already heard that as well today, flexibility is of paramount importance. Mm-hmm. So you can't have resilience without flexibility of the solution. If you stick to rigid things here, you will eventually fail in the future. And third, there's always something that you can improve. But if you don't look for it, you will potentially not find it. So analyzing the status quo, challenging the status quo is important.
Perfect. Well, I think that's it for this episode. That just leaves me to thank you, Philip, for sharing your thoughts with me today, and to remind all of you listening to follow Ecosio for more EDI insights in the future. See you next time.